Hello, and welcome to the Screamcast, a podcast about MTV's slasher series Scream. I'm Dan, and today we are not talking about MTV's slasher series Scream. We are talking about a fun little horror, indie, sort of cult classic, Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. Today I'm joined by two of my friends who have not been on before. This is, say hi, Jesse and Trevor.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Trevor Newton.
Ooh, really last name. Yeah. All right, so before we really get into our reaction, so this is sort of the first time Trevor's seen it. He like saw parts of it before. This is the first time Jesse's seen it, and I've seen it a few times. We're going to sort of just do a first reactions, like, you know, reacting to horror movies type of thing like we did last week with Scream. And before we get into that, though, can each of you just give me a little bit about yourself, like a quick little thing, so they know where you're coming from?
I'm an independent filmmaker and photographer. I live in Connecticut, and I went to Connecticut College to study film.
Cool.
This is Trevor again. I don't know if you know my voice yet. I am not an independent filmmaker. I have no credentials with film, but I watch a lot of movies, so I'm not totally stupid.
Yeah.
I'm just a programmer.
And he's very just nice. A programmer. He's not totally stupid. That would be his box quote on this episode.
Not completely idiotic.
All right, so we have no outline or anything of this. We're just going to react. So I guess we'll just go in a circle. And Jesse, what did you think of Behind the Mask?
I thought that it was a pretty decent film. I thought that as a piece of film art, it was very accomplished and did what it was trying to do well. I found it pretty contrived, but I think that it made it work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are some of my basic thoughts, so positive.
Okay, cool. Trevor?
I also enjoyed the movie. don't want to spoil too many of my awesome comments that are going to come up later.
but have some issues.
Right, it soured at the end
for
me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I'll just throw in... I mean, I've seen this movie a bunch of times. I really enjoy it. I think it's a lot of fun. I definitely don't think it's perfect. I probably am going to agree with a lot of what Trevor's going to say as far as the... ending third, even though I personally like the twist aspect, it does end up following and going through with a lot of the conventions they deconstruct in the first two thirds.
Yeah.
And that there's some issues with that, and both in art and in, like, ethically, I would go. But, yeah, you can go ahead.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, yes, that's a good point, too. Yes, there's spoiler alert. We're going to talk about, if you haven't seen this movie, go watch it. It's a fun horror movie. And then come back and see what we thought of it.
Okay, so, I think, did you guys think that it would have worked better if Kelly had really been the one that he was going after, and that twist hadn't happened, if the twist had been that they were actually going to go help, rather than, and not stand by?
No, like, I preferred it the way it was. So why do you think it would be better if it was Kelly?
I wouldn't make it exactly the same, like,
scenario.
In terms of when... I would have made it more dramatic when they decided to go in and actually help them.
Yeah.
I probably would have had them start driving away and then, bring the car around and, like, go after them. You know, really emphasize that as the twist, because it's not the twist, so it's not emphasized the way the film is now. But I think that would have been more challenging to the form to actually have somebody, like, really... with a horror movie?
Yeah.
Also, are we explicitly rated?
You can go do what you need to do.
To have someone really mess with a horror movie? Like, even in, you know, Scream, I've only seen the first Scream, but even in the first Scream and, you know, Cabin in the Woods.
Don't spoil Cabin in the Woods.
Just spoil all the movies.
You can spoil, talk about Scream.
Bruce Willis is dead! Anyway.
I like that, because that's not specific on what the movie is.
Yeah. Anyway.
I love Die Hard.
It would be another interesting movie. I think that this movie is fine as it was. I would also like to see a similar thing where a third party really comes in and actually, like, and really interferes.
You're saying the idea of the third party and how they would mess things up as opposed to her actually just becoming the first party.
Yeah, okay. Because, like, as it is, it's just a slightly more complicated... conventional horror movie.
Yeah.
I feel so similarly. It's actually remarkable, Jesse, how similarly you feel to me.
Yeah.
So I thought the same thing. Next to each other. These people, the good guys, the three people who have, I guess I shouldn't call them good guys.
Yeah.
They're bad people.
Yeah.
The three filmmakers have been going through this entire movie and like learning about the techniques.
Yeah.
The plan, the explicit plan that this guy is going to follow. Of course, he changes the plan.
Mm.
But what I was thinking was, well, they'll go into this situation. They'll realize, of course, that they have to help out.
Yeah.
And they'll be able to use their new knowledge of how serial killers work to do something about it.
Yeah.
No, that's not what happens.
No.
They can do nothing about it.
Yeah.
They did nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, it's so fast-paced at the end that there's like very little breathing room for them to like think about it and try and figure something out. It's like,
Yeah, exactly. No. Like,
which is understandable.
The only difference between the previous flash forwards that was like, here's how the plan is ideally going to work, and what actually happened was like, certain corpses were in different positions.
I mean, I wouldn't go quite that far. I did like at least that, I think it's Todd actually does try to do the running away thing, and that...
But he doesn't, because I was going to bring that up, the running away thing. Because
he looks back.
Right, we're talking about, just to be clear.
Yeah, the overweight.
When the old guy, the old serial killer guy, she asks him, the main character asks him, how does one get away from this alive?
I was like showing the gun and not shooting it.
He explains, well, you run away, you get up, you get ahead of the person, and you run as fast as you can, and you never look back.
Mm-hmm.
That never happens in the movie.
And you find a clear point,
right?
So with nothing surrounding, and like, it was admittedly foggy that night.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I think they're supposed to be saying that Todd tried it but failed. You're right, that they probably should have had Taylor or someone actually attempt it. And that makes a lot of sense. And that we all talked about the fact that he tells Taylor that he tampered with all the weapons besides the ones in the back, and then he still gets one of the first ones, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, what was strange about that was that the axe she got was in the back.
Yeah, so maybe he was playing on her knowledge.
Possibly.
Then.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's actually two ways that he could have done this maybe a little bit better. As far as you're right that they could have either gone the way of having the people now be really smart and you know go a different way, but they also could have had him be so smart that he plans for their plans.
Right.
And I don't really even feel like that happened either.
Yeah.
And
he was just inexplicably amazing.
Yeah.
I know that we're probably going to talk a lot about sort of the last act of the movie, but I also want to like give credence to the first couple of acts. I really, really enjoyed watching the beginning part where he's sort of like talking about training. Mm. Like there's that one part where he's like breathing really hard after
the cardio.
The cardio of it. You would not believe the amount of cardio I have to do.
Yeah.
Like the part, you know, like when you have to walk as fast as people who are running, they're like running as fast as they can.
Yeah.
Like the comedy I thought was really well done, even though it did pretty constantly make me think, this is like a slightly knockoff Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Like, it's partly just that he looks a little bit like him, but I thought his physical comedy was actually pretty similar.
I actually really liked his acting.
Oh, me too.
Throughout
it just, if Jim Carrey hadn't existed, then I'd be like, this is just great.
Yeah.
But as it was, because I'm only mildly familiar with Jim Carrey, but he's so prolific.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I will go so far as to say that you guys are right in that this movie is more successful at being comedic and deconstructing and just the first two thirds than it is in the actually falling through with the horror in the last third.
Also, honestly, it felt kind of tacked on.
The final third?
Yeah. I would have been actually fine if they'd like stretched out the first two acts a little bit and had the flash forwards be like type of flash forwards that you see in like a heist movie where, you know, they're saying, this is our plan. Yeah. And then it's like the flash forwards is explaining the plan, but it's what's actually happening.
Reservoir Dogs, sort of. I mean, those are flashbacks.
Here's the thing. I think I'm sort of in between what you guys are saying as far as I get the want to have them actually use their knowledge, right? And them actually come in and mess things up. But I still like the idea of her being the actual one and him having a bigger plan. I think they should have just done something where they come in, they use their knowledge, and then he's still, again, like, he's even more ahead of them.
Now, I agree with you.
Yeah.
However, this girl, the main character, somehow goes the entire length of the movie without connecting the fact that she is a virgin to the fact that this guy is, obsessed with finding a
virgin. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I had not thought about that, but, like, obviously that's gonna be something that she is at least, like, somewhat aware of.
Yeah.
in American culture in general. If you're, like, at 20, like, 5, I would presume, 24, 25, she's a grad student.
Yeah.
You're old virgin. It's gonna be something you think about on a semi-regular basis, at least.
Yeah.
Especially if someone's like, yeah, you know, I always look for the virgins and the group around them when I'm thinking about murdering people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can tell.
Yeah.
Let me tell
and
you.
And they also left a bunch of little hints for you, too, as far as that she actually says no to the alcohol.
Right.
And she seems disgusted by the fact that he's looking for a virgin. Yes. And things like that. And
she's curious about how he can tell.
I mean, I literally just connected with her on both of those points. I drink myself, but I understood why she didn't want to in any way inhibit herself
in front of that murderer.
In front of two murderers. And I also, like, agreed with her when she was like, so you're pro-life and a chauvinist. I was like, yeah, I agree. He's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And he's also a murderer, or intended murderer.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised you went to the level of how she's so stupid before you went to she's super callous and awful, and we're supposed to still like her.
Well, okay. So,
Sorry, go ahead.
I imagine that you were about to say something that is somewhat like what I'm going to say, which is that I thought that part of her personality was sort of... There are a couple things in this movie that lead you to believe that the world of this movie is not Earth.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's some sort of variant of Earth where it's more socially acceptable to be a psycho killer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So she is like... The fact that she's sort of okay with this doesn't make her some sort of horrible human being.
Yeah,
She's, like, just kind of a curious academic or something.
Yeah, it's contrived for the sake of the premise. Because if you're going to do this, then you have to have a group of people in your movie who are documentarians, who are third party, not serial killers, who are like, I'm just curious about this phenomenon.
Yeah. I think that...
I also like that Chucky... is a real serial killer in this movie.
Yes, and in general, I like that they drop the names of Mike and Freddy and Jason and all that stuff. But
I really like that. That's like, especially when the old guy is talking about them, he's like, it was a paradigm shift in the industry.
Yeah, and
that's really good.
Yeah, I definitely, the fact that nobody used to come back, and that he also talks about his work was in like the 70s and stuff like that, which is like when the boom happened.
Right.
One thing I did want to say is that I think there's a lot of things here that are, like, really full of potential that I can agree that maybe they don't totally pay off as far as, I think part of the reason that she acts so crazy and that, you know, that it's so contrived or whatever is supposed to be slightly a critique on documentarians and ethics in general.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And as far as that, like, they get sucked in and she doesn't think about the fact that she's a virgin and could actually be implicated, and they don't think about the fact that this is, you know, they go, whoa, this is real. They don't really think about what's actually going to come from it, and they just get sucked in. They think we're third parties, or this is just all in fun, and they don't really think about what's happening.
Right.
And so I do think that's sort of an indictment of documentarians and talking about ethics and stuff like that, too. But it doesn't totally go as far as it should, and the characters aren't necessarily complex enough to really say anything real about that. And sort of similarly, one thing I like about this versus something like Scream, which also makes this less commercial than Scream, is they really go deep into the meta and the deconstructing of the genre as far as like the yonic imagery and the closets and all that stuff. At the same time that they just do it anyway, and like...
It's one of those things, like, if I mention it, then I can do it, and no one can get mad at me.
Yeah. I mean, when they talk, like, I think the joke of the gratuitous boob thing is funny. I think that's funny when they have
also,
that.
They held on it. Yeah. I know it's supposed to be gratuitous.
Yeah.
They held on it a little longer than was necessary, even for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that joke is really funny, but then when you have, like, literally, I think it's three times that the girl goes up this ladder and you can see her underwear.
Yeah.
It just seems very...
I was gonna mention that.
Yeah.
As long as we're pulling off the band-aid of, like, this is the stuff that sucks.
Yeah.
What happened there? Okay, so in the flash forward, we see her climbing up the ladder frantically, and he pulls her over and he kills her.
Mm.
And then in the actual thing, stuff has started to go awry.
Yeah.
She climbs up the ladder frantically and nothing happens.
Mm.
And we're like, okay, so that's like a pattern break.
Yeah.
The thing that happened in the flash forward is not happening now.
Yeah, but then they do it anyway.
They like do some weird maneuver where they
end up back down
go
on the ground
up
floor.
On stairs that are haystacks and then somehow end up back down on the floor below it.
Yeah.
And then she climbs up. What is she doing? Why is that her tactic? Yeah. That's so messy.
Yeah.
It's so messy.
Yeah. I mean, also, just like, I sort of have a split opinion of my own on this as to how much of the, like, plot hole type stuff and, like, you know, totally ridiculous decision type stuff is, like, meta.
Yeah.
Because that always happens in movies.
Yeah.
And I think that some of it definitely is.
Yeah.
But I'm suspicious to give full credit to filmmakers that after seeing this to be like, oh yeah, every single one of those things was super intentional.
Well, I think that this is one of those movies where it's like in a middle place where I think it's doing some things that are like really actually smart, and I want to take it as like an artistic film that's trying to say something, but then they make such ridiculous things that I end up just saying, well, it's a fun movie, I'm just going to turn off my brain because it's ridiculous, but it's enjoyable and it's funny and there's horror and, you know, so it's in that place where it doesn't really, you know, when you try a little bit, you end up wanting to criticize it more. And so if it had tried less, then you just be like, well, it's totally just like, I know what you did last summer, just like a dumb campy movie, and you're not going to like yell at it for doing these things. But because it's trying to be smart, you end up getting more angry at it. And so,
well, that's exactly how I felt towards the end, because they're creating this mythos in this world that it's sort of normal. I mean, it's weird, but it's also sort of normal to be a killer. And it's okay to, like, just ask somebody about being a killer, and he's like, oh, the good old days when I was a murderer.
Yeah.
And this is a believable mythos. Like, they do a good job doing all these jokes about it.
Sell it.
Yeah. They really sell it. And then at the end, stuff just starts to fall apart. Like, people are being stupid in ways that don't make any sense. Like
the fact that they didn't run in, grab the kids by the scruffs of their necks, and drag them to the van immediately.
Right. Yeah.
Like, or even, especially drive the van up to the house.
Yeah. Especially the part where they're like, oh, we have to... I always think it's weird when they're like, we have to go show them the dead bodies upstairs so they'll know to run out, as though they're like... Like, it's like a video game or something. You have to, like, lead the lemmings over to here so they react in a specific way.
It's lemmings. This is lemmings. Yeah.
What an obscure reference to make.
No, it just feels very strange. And I agree that it is weird that they don't immediately run to the van. And it's just... And that no one tries to call 911.
They have no service.
Yeah, but they don't try.
No, but he does try to call.
Yeah, but the camera people never try.
Right.
Did he maybe mention earlier in the movie?
Because I know, because I like remembered when, because I was thinking about it a lot. I was like expecting him to say something about it. Because I was also expecting.
Like scrambling.
Yeah. And I was also expecting the older guy to say something about like, well, you know, the kids now, they have their cell phones, so you have to take that.
Yeah, that like, is interesting that they didn't.
I mean, it was 2006 or 7.
It was earlier,
So
iPhones.
No smartphones. But there were, like, pretty widespread cell phone reception.
Yeah. At the same time, maybe the assumption
is... also supposed to be out in the boonies.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that if they're so out in the boonies that you don't have anywhere. But... that's definitely true. I don't want to super hate on this movie, though, because I do think that the basic premise is very clever, and that it's really fun watching them deconstruct how he does this. And I even like the ending that we had that seed that he put the fire retardant stuff on, that this is all planned, that he comes back to
the I've forgotten about it.
That was the entire thing.
When he sat up in the end credits, I was like, you were on fire! And your head was crushed!
Yeah. I mean, obviously...
An end credits gag, but this makes no sense.
Yeah, and my assumption is also that he might have rigged the Apple thing enough that it can't really crush his head, like, or something like that.
But like, also, like, as he himself mentions, there's so much that can go wrong, and, like, almost nothing does.
Yeah.
Especially when you take into consideration that she was really the final girl. Then it means that probably nothing went wrong because
his whole plan went exactly
his plan what included them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but does that bother you?
Yeah.
I don't know if that bothers me.
I guess it doesn't in the context of this movie where, you know, there's a culture of...
And
they say that everyone always prepares.
Yeah.
Or at least nowadays.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, I mean,
so I guess within the context of the movie, it doesn't.
Yeah. I just find it fun that he would prepare to that degree and that we see the preparation, that we see that he does the cardio, that he has these snapping turtles that connect to his backstory of how his body was eaten up by turtles or whatever. Yeah. And
it's great. I mean, yeah. All that stuff is fantastic.
Yeah.
Which is, it's strange because if you didn't know anything about this movie,
yeah,
and you heard that there was a scene in this movie where this guy is walking around the grounds of the place where where the climax is gonna happen, and we're seeing flash forwards to like what his plan is going to, what's gonna actually come out of his plan if it goes perfectly.
Yeah,
what you imagine next is that in the climax it won't go perfectly. Yeah. Something will change.
Yeah,
right. So that was right. Like
it. I does mean, something change. Did change.
It does yeah. change.
It changes yeah. from that, but again, presumably
he still has everything under control
because yeah. he was lying to them.
Yeah.
His actual plan
right.
did include...
And it's a different twist. It's yeah. not like it's not a yeah. twist. It's still
yeah.
a twist.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I didn't expect the twist, but as soon as it hit, I wasn't like, I was yeah. like, oh, yeah. of course, right.
Yeah.
That's exactly where this movie was headed the yeah. whole time.
I think, but I do think that this movie does a good job of... You're so sucked into that universe that you don't really think about it. So that I feel like most people probably would be surprised, but I think most people would have your reaction.
Yeah.
Where like, you're like, oh this course, makes sense. But they wouldn't, but it wouldn't be like a third into the movie. They're like, oh, well, obvious is going this way. It's so stupid that they're dragging it out. You know, like, I feel like most people would not think of that ahead right. of time.
Yeah. So, and of course, the
Taylor.
Taylor. Think, of course, yeah. Taylor is an important and necessary character for this whole thing to work.
Yeah.
But it's also true that. Can't remember his first name.
Vernon. Leslie.
Leslie. Leslie.
Trevor.
Is the most interesting character.
Yeah.
Like, we like to follow him. We like when he has
he's
moments
so charismatic.
Of, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And we like when he has moments of weakness. Like,
yeah.
oh, he's a little bit unsure about this or this and that.
Pissed.
Yeah. He, yeah, well, angry. Did you like when he was crying because he was so happy?
Right. All that stuff yeah. is fantastic. So it is, it's a surprising move by the movie to end on a note that's all about her.
Yeah.
Where he is not talking at all. He's not... Like, the closest thing to a moment that actually involves his personality after the whole killing starts is when he takes off his mask while he's, like, breaking the guy's neck in the mud or something. But I didn't understand.
No, like, he didn't take off his... The guy grabbed his mask off his face.
Right, and then he pulls the rest of it off.
No, yeah. Todd just pushed it slightly.
So wait, is the mask off for the rest of the movie at that point?
I think he puts it back on.
Oh, yeah.
I think and then right. he takes and it off when he's being crushed in the apple crusher.
That's strange.
And, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what happens.
Here. Right, but there's nothing... He has no desperation at this point. Like,
yeah.
He's just sort of doing it.
Right.
I think that the idea there is that the guy that... I think you're supposed to be going on the same journey that she went on. As right. far as the guy that you found so charismatic that you sort of fell in love yeah. with, the way she fell in love with, you go, holy shit, how did I get lost in this? He's actually just pure evil.
Yeah. yeah.
And...
I mean...
I see where you're coming from, though, that it is strange and that...
Because she's basically uninteresting, like, in every way.
I wouldn't go that far, but...
I agree with Trevor. I'm not sure for the same reasons that Trevor feels that way, but I feel like because he never gets desperate in any way, like, the closest thing we see him to desperate is just the sort of physical fighting they do.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and, like, at the end of that, I sort of just felt like he was having a moment of catharsis anyway, and she was sort of fulfilling that, and we, like...
Especially when you know that he planned to die and everything. Like, he really planned the entire thing.
And it makes sense that we didn't really get any backstory on her because she's a documentarian.
Yeah.
But the fact that we didn't get any other than that she hasn't had sex, which is not, like, much of a fact.
I think there's a lot of little things that give you hints to who she is. I think she's clearly neurotic. I think he clearly has a lot of, like, drive and that she's in control of these two idiots and that she's
I mean, that's
one,
traits, like, not backstory. Okay,
but I don't know that necessarily
need
that.
Well, I mean,
that.
I just, like, I found it a little bit difficult to connect with her in the end other than on a human level of, probably
you.
Better not to get murdered.
Yeah. I will also agree, I think that there is something sort of lost... both artistically and ethically, when she's planned things out so much that she ends up the way she wins and doesn't even actually win because she does exactly what he wants,
right.
is just by fulfilling what he had already put out for her.
Oh, yeah. No,
he
totally.
Just, yeah, so she never even really...
That's me and Trevor's me.
Yeah, she never even really gets to do anything intelligent or... And she's actually, in some ways, even less... active than a normal final girl.
Right.
Because she knows what she's... Yeah. She knows the script.
There was nothing creative about her actions in the whole climax of the movie.
Speaking of guns that didn't go off.
That's why she should have run away and not looked back.
Yeah.
Or, actually, again, like in the early part where, that's the first gun that they set up that didn't go off.
Yeah.
But the literal gun they set up that didn't go off, except immediately, was Halloran's gun.
Mm.
When there was a minute while they were like...
Oh, they could have gotten his gun.
Could have gotten his gun.
Yeah.
And that would have, like... Really, I would have been really... it would have fit the script completely for her to shoot Leslie.
Yeah. I think that that's totally true.
And then he could have been... Like, it doesn't have to end the movie. He could be like, you know I'm wearing a vest. Yeah.
Well, similar to that, I agree that she should have gone... She should have ran and he should have been prepared for her to run as long as she could. There should have been a fence or there should have been something that turns her around. Or she should have grabbed someone that she cares about and held them back and so she... has no choice but to turn around. Like something he should have planned. That gun should have gone off, and he should have planned for it. I think that would have made a lot of sense. I do think that you end up with. I think one of the things we're just generally talking about is that you end up with a protagonist issue in this movie,
right?
When you have, and I think you also would have had kind of an issue if they had gone further with was her name Kelly or whatever as the actual survivor girl.
Because
if she does the climactic thing, then it's this weird, you know. So. Yeah. I think that there are definitely a lot of weird issues going on here.
Out of the bag.
I want to talk about a little bit more. So, are there any other like big comedic moments that stuck out at you? You guys really liked her meeting the friends and the whole chopping up.
I mean, everything with
Doc. Oh my god, the moment when he's chopping the carrot.
Yeah.
Right, the carrot was amazing.
Yeah,
let's just all be clear about how amazing the carrot.
The sound design of this movie was really, really good.
Yeah.
There were a lot of moments where. There was one moment, I can't remember when it was, but when things got really intense, and they cut out all the, like, crickets and background noise, and then when the tension eased off, they brought that back up, and I thought that was really nice. And they got a lot of use out of using sound for off-screen killing in space.
Yeah.
So, props to this movie for being really smart and good in terms of, on a budget, making this really work.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, and you can confirm or deny this, that someone who wasn't like used to looking at films like as a filmmaker would have really picked up on that stuff. Did you feel like, oh, they cheaped out and didn't actually show it?
No.
Yeah.
No. I never got that sense. And here's my segue out of the sound thing and into Doc Halloran, who is the best thing in this movie. Which was, I thought it was so funny. My favorite part was when he first shows up at the library. By the way, I want to preface this with another library thing. At the end... One of the two cameramen, they're basically indistinguishable for a large part of the movie.
Doug is the little one.
Yeah.
They're in the upstairs, and he does his first, he goes into the bedroom and kills the two lovers. And one of the cameramen says, wow, this is real.
Yeah.
But one of the cameramen, it could not have been that one, was already in the library when he did his first kill.
I might have missed it. Did he actually kill a librarian? I thought he almost did, and Ahab came just in time. Am I wrong about that?
No, she sort of slumped down, and I assumed that.
No, he stabbed her in the back with his scythe, with his hand scythe.
For some reason, I assumed she survived.
No, she did. But,
okay, that's a very good point.
She did.
He'd already murdered someone right in front of him.
Right.
See, I had always thought that they got all the way to that moment without him actually killing anyone.
A creepy, weirdo librarian who tells stories in scary ways.
I actually really liked that.
I loved that
moment.
I think that voice was slightly edited, but
the voice was great.
But it was done really well.
Yeah.
It was, I thought that whole scene was done really well because I think the acting was a little intentionally bad.
Especially from those points were supposed to be very campy.
That scene.
What? Tell me the story.
Yeah, amazing scene.
Yeah.
Okay. So the end of that scene was glorious.
Yeah.
Doc Halloran shows up and he's like, Leslie.
Yeah.
He shoots.
Yeah.
And Leslie like flees the scene.
Yeah.
And there's this dramatic action music playing and we get a zoom in on Doc Halloran's face and then just cuts to outside and the music stops.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's like we were in this world of campy horror moviness and now we're just out of it.
Yeah. And I actually like you talk about like you like how he struggles and he's worried or whatever. You see how much you connect with the character when he gets so excited about the Ahab. I love when he does that little flip thing at his friend's house while they're watching the video. Like you get excited with him.
Also like all the like slightly subtle things of showing how athletic he was, I thought was really
smart
definitely. Because like that's a huge aspect of it if you're going to do it sort of in a realist way to be like Yeah, he's, like, super fit and can't actually do all this stuff. He's not actually supernatural. He just comes off that
way. Yeah, I really, really like that. I mean, I also, I talked about, like, I think, was it Todd was running away and called him a physical specimen, you beautiful physical specimen or something.
You physical specimen!
I do want to talk a little bit more about the cinematography as much as how they switch it up between when it's them filming for the documentary versus, like, more campy moments, and also sort of my confusion with... So we have that opening scene, right, where she's on the, well, not the very opening scene, but the scene where she's, you know, basically is talking before we see Leslie, where she's, like, talking and explaining all the people. And so that's shot, and so, and maybe this is just me being ignorant or whatever, that it's shot in such a way that it's more like a video footage, and it's more, and it's, like, smaller scale or whatever. So how come that is never, that never comes back? When all the other times when it's more documentary style, why isn't it back to that?
And in fact, the very next shot, so they pull into the door, and then they pull out, and she's like, oh, did I sound too much like this?
Yeah, and that's still documentary.
Still documentary, but a way higher definition, nicer camera.
Yeah, so I didn't really get what they were, like, generally, I think the cinematography is really cool in this movie, and they have cool stylistic things, but if you really think about some of their, some of what's going on, it doesn't, especially because there are scenes where I feel like you're not supposed to think there are any cameramen there, but it's still in the documentary-ish style.
Yeah.
And so it's weird in that, like, I think they're just trying to switch it up as far as... Because when they switch to the, like, campy horror movie thing, you want it to be obvious. But it did make certain scenes strange. His two friends, when they go to visit to his two friends, don't you get the impression that it's just Taylor and Leslie that go visit them? But then it's shot in this documentary style. And because no one acknowledges the cameraman. The cameraman don't say anything.
No, they do. The wife, Jamie, says, oh, are they filming?
Remember? Okay.
Yeah, no, yeah, they're definitely there.
All right.
They're just not being... that's pretty common in documentaries. You don't acknowledge the camera people. And, like, you often tell your subject.
Yes, I'm talking about as far as the finished product, but we're watching the raw footage being taken. So to me, it feels weirder.
No, it's all edited.
Do you think so?
I don't... Clearly, it comes out as a movie. We're not watching from start to finish everything they shot.
I think obviously not everything they shot, but I think I always took most of the scenes as... I don't know. It felt strange to me that it did feel more just like... this is manicured? Because then that's even more confusing, because it's like, who edited this? Who put this together? How does it connect?
Taylor survives.
Well, some things weren't even shot, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Some scenes were not even... There was no camera.
Well, yeah, I mean... Yeah. Again, contrived movie.
Yeah.
But a good portion of it is... I think it's supposed to be, like, a portion of it is documentary, and a portion of it is classic filmmaking. Which is an interesting dynamic to strike, but, you know... It doesn't need to make sense. It's hard.
I guess this is another... To me, this is just another example of what I was saying as far as the artistry is so good that it makes me ask more questions. And so, like, in some ways, like, I think cinematographically and stylistically, it's really cool. But when you do that, and it is so good, I think about it more. And with little inconsistencies seem strange to me. I did like things like when they switched... A lot of the times when they switched to the, like, we're now watching a movie time, it started with a very high-angle shot, like a crane shot or something that was very obviously not done by a documentary crew. So a lot of them, like, started high and went down, like, especially like, when she came into the library and whatever, all that stuff.
Yes.
So I thought a lot of that was really cool, and I think that they switched it up well. It's just that there are little moments where it felt strange to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's not a huge deal. It's just something I was thinking about. Anything else that stood out? Any of the characters that we haven't really talked about? I mean, we covered Leslie and Taylor as pretty much the main people, Doc Hollerin. Right. Oh, did you want to talk about the Ahab thing?
Oh, just that that's the way that they defined it in the movie. My mom's a Melville scholar. That does not fit Ahab at all.
Yeah.
It's just a bad...
It also
Ahab represents humanity at best. Definitely not the force of good.
Right. So, just to clarify what happened in the movie, I mean, I assume that a lot of people listening to this have seen the movie, but just in case, there's a part when Doc Halloran, who's this sort of vampire hunter-esque guy, like, he's this guy who's supposed to come and kill the bad guy. He is called the Ahab.
Yeah.
Which is explained as the character who represents everything good about humanity.
And they should, I should also put, they say in this context.
In this context.
They just say in this context. Yeah. But also, this movie invented that term.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a couple things I want to say. One, that it's a strange thing for them to to give a term to, given that I feel like everything else they talked about in the movie, they were using just the terminology of film scholars.
Maybe they just couldn't find it, because I can't think of a
term. Yeah, well, because there definitely is a thing, and it really especially reminds me of Halloween and the Doctor in Halloween.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I personally thought it was the same
actor. Yeah. Definitely, yeah. So it definitely is a thing, and maybe just didn't have a term, but it is strange. I do think that they just don't, we're probably just a little ignorant, didn't know exactly what it meant, and we're just thinking of exactly, like, his ultimate foe or whatever, you know, like, the right. idea of he seeks him forever, yeah. and he will never give up
trying to destroy him. I was extremely confused about that, because when I heard Ahab, I was like, yeah, it's the ultimate rival person. Rivalry, Why do you have to explain it in any other weirder way?
Yeah. I agree.
So wait, so red herring is a film term, or is that?
Yeah, red herring. That's red like herring a mystery term.
It's a storytelling term.
Well, right, but the way they used it in this film was slightly different, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, it was a little bit more specific.
Oh no. Okay, what the red herring thing was? He said, "Oh, she knows a janitor or something." That was going to be the person.
Let me explain, because I've seen it a bunch of times. The red herring was specifically throwing her off and making her think they have a connection, which is not how I would... I would use the term. I've used the term red herring on this podcast tons of times when talking about Scream and the whodunit and who's the real killer versus who's they're setting you up to think is the real killer. It is weird that... I don't think that usually the killer makes you think...
He's trying to kill somebody else.
The red herring would be to make you maybe think who's killing you is someone other than who's killing you, mate. Like,
but I mean, thought
because also Kelly is actually a red herring.
Yes, Taylor. Kelly is a red herring. Yeah.
So that makes sense, but that was not what they said. Yeah. So what they said is not what I'm remembering. They said is not what you guys were saying.
Okay, what do you think?
So I remember them saying that the red herring is the first person that he kills, sort of a tangential person. So he goes and kills somebody, like, in front of her.
Yeah.
I don't really know what the effect is supposed to be.
See, I thought the red herring...
If that happened to me, there's no way that I would, like, go out into a cabin in the woods with my friends a few days later.
Okay, so I'm not sure if you're right or not. That's fine. I know that was connected, but that was all... I thought the red herring was more about the message, the newspaper thing that he made up that wasn't true.
Right.
So, but maybe you're right. I think the idea was... What you're talking about was more about creating paranoia for her, killing someone that's very tangentially related to you, so you're not sure if it's about you or if it's just a weird happenstance. And so there is a weird confusion in this area.
Yeah, so to recap, what happened for Kelly, she discovers an article in which she thinks that...
She's related to the person who raped
the mother of...
And therefore related to him.
And therefore related to him. And then her friend, the librarian, was murdered in front of her. Then she went to his house for shits and giggles to screw her nerdy boyfriend.
And that is strange, but almost stranger is the fact that the old man, hearing the main character, or hearing the murderer's plan to kill one of her friends, says, no, that's too much, that'll spook her.
Yeah.
Instead, kill a librarian. Right in front of her. How is that a better plan? Doesn't matter who it is. If somebody gets murdered by a mass murderer right in front of you.
I thought that he was going to kill her, kill the librarian after they left, so she'd come in the next day and be like, wait, she's, missing or dead?
Right.
Yeah. Because that would be whoa, something spooky's going on, but it may or may not be related to me. That makes sense, as opposed to what happened.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you that as far as what they talk about, feels like it fits the usual tropes, but then what happened doesn't.
But not necessarily in a better way.
Yeah, because what they talk about fits the trope. Like, I think usually, the first killer is, someone they vaguely know, they're not sure, it's they're upset. Yeah,
homeless person that you
they're frightened
on the street, right?
The opening of Scream is, a vague friend of Sydney's, but isn't, one of her close friends kind of thing. And so... It's yes, she'll be upset and she'll be on edge, but she's not going to be it's all about me yet. And so what they were saying made sense as far as deconstructing, but then what he did is actually the third kill, I would say, or the second kill. Once you're starting to get her a little bit more, it's about me. And so, I agree that was a little weird.
So I was also a little confused about the mythos of this world.
Yeah.
He is always talking about what we usually do, what I've done in the past. Has he done anything in the past?
No, he hasn't done it. He hasn't actually done it yet. This is his first time.
So, now I wish I'd written these down, but I swear there are multiple times in this movie when he says, what we usually do, or
he's talking about, his...
The culture of serial killers.
So that's why I'm a little confused that he's so good at it. How is he so amazing? Well, I mean, if I guess he's never done it.
I guess he has a mentor.
Yeah,
he has a mentor in the form of Eugene. And like,
but you're saying the first person he's ever killed is that librarian? He did that pretty fucking
maybe,
well.
Maybe I'm wrong. I think it might be ambiguous about whether about how much history he has and how much.
It's really ambiguous.
Yeah.
I mean,
but I don't know if that's a bad
thing.
It's not a
the other thing.
I'm just confused about it.
The other thing is that these guys must have some kind of a forum or newsletter because all of the like stuff that they talk about, you know, like the specifics that happen, we see that in horror movies because we see a movie with a third-person omniscient camera that's like, here's Mike Myers stabbing this person because she had sex.
Yeah.
Like,
how does he know?
How does he know what Mike's up to and like why Mike is specifically doing this? Presumably it's because there's some kind of a social circle of these people.
Yeah, which I think you can extrapolate based on the fact that he knows this one particular guy.
But it threw me a little
bit. Do you think it would have made sense if, or do you think you like it exactly how they handled the friends, or do you think that they should have maybe put like a hint that he's one of the people we know? Like, should he have been Michael Myers or something like that, or maybe someone more obscure? Right. Do you like it the way it went?
I liked the way it went. Yeah, I liked it the way it went.
Yeah.
Because I thought it, like, added another dimension of, like, there are even more
than
those, like, four that they mentioned in the beginning. We were talking about how this is kind of indie.
Yeah.
It's, like, clearly has connection to major studios because they wouldn't be able to make references to these major characters without permission. And they have the guy who played Freddy Krueger in it.
Yeah. I think that, it's interesting. I liked the fact that it's implied that that his wife is a survivor of some kind, that they found some sort of connection, especially given how we see how Taylor sort of falls for him too, and that's sort of following through on that thing.
Right.
Especially because, that's another thing where it's like this world is so crazy and people are just generally callous because you have this wife who was a survivor who just marries him and seems kind of.
Oh man, you killed my friends. It was so cute. Yeah.
And she's enthusiastic about more.
And he just seems. He mostly seems normal and nice aside from.
Yeah, very like 50s housewife about it.
Yeah.
Right. So there were a number of strange things with this old man.
Yeah.
So what is she so busy about for 3 days that she forgets to go get another day?
This makes no sense, okay? What is this chamber that he's in? Okay. Okay. So we get introduced to this man because he's underground in a chamber.
In a metal tank.
So she, I guess, buried him in there.
Yeah.
And then forgot about him for a couple days.
Yeah.
And then comes back and takes him out, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry that I forgot about you or something. And meanwhile, somebody asks why he's in there, because he's retired now.
Yeah.
And the answer is, I don't know. And we never find out.
That's a joke. I think it's funny.
What's the joke?
That he doesn't know, I think.
The joke is that he doesn't know, and that this guy might just like doing it now.
I see.
Yeah, that's my...
thing is that he seems so well-adjusted now, he doesn't seem like he's all messed up because
of it. Not to like conflate these two things, but like lots of like athletes keep practicing and being in good shape after
I
retire.
See. Okay, so is it? I understand. I wasn't privy
to that. Wasn't
that
funny? It makes you feel better.
Yeah. Well, that character was really funny though.
Like, yeah,
I loved that character.
I mean, I thought it was like just a very funny way to introduce a character.
It was a good thing.
Yeah, him coming out of that. I thought, and it also obviously set up the ending and him being in the whole idea that they pretend to be dead and all that stuff.
People are going to be so confused by the sound I just
made. I'd forgotten about that, too.
Yeah.
You remembered a lot of little things.
Well, I've seen it a few times.
That's true.
But yeah, there's a lot of little hints that are there so that you can buy into the ending more.
Right.
And you can buy into how crazy his master plan is, because obviously he plans so much and all that stuff. I felt like I wanted to talk maybe potentially a little bit more about the Yannick imagery, the closet,
the phallic
pro-life
imagery.
The phallic imagery.
What was that all about?
So I'm interested to see Trevor's thought process as far as someone who hasn't been studying this. All that stuff is stuff you like hardcore read about if you're learning about slasher films. That's a big academic things. So it's totally making fun of the academic papers and how everybody says that, like, oh, because of the 70s, that's back then, a lot of these films were in some ways celebrated for having the women win and having the women take control. And so then people looked back on them, they talked a lot about how they do that by taking on masculine traits. They do that by taking phallic objects. They, you know.
Yeah. Also, the fact of the matter is that a lot of these movies were very exhibitionist sexually.
Yeah.
Like the scene that we get where it just is a close-up on her, that girl's breasts.
Yeah.
Shots like that did occur in more of the less well-known slash movies of the 70s, the 60s and 70s, but
yeah. And I would happened. Say...
So, like, there's definitely strong arguments to be made about the sexism of slasher movies.
Yeah, and I would... culture. I would even go so far as to say that the under-the-skirt shot, the fact that they did it three times, was purposely as a joke that you would see it three times. That doesn't excuse it to me, but I do think that they're trying to make a statement with that, especially because they do it three times.
Right.
So... I think that that's interesting. I think it's debatable how effective that is or whatever. But, yeah, so the whole thing of you empower yourself through cock is very much a scholarly thing. The thing about the closet, I mean, especially, like, in Halloween, there's a lot of things of hiding in the closet and, the, you know, that they leave you alone when you're in the closet because it represents the room. And then especially the yonic imagery actually reminds me a lot of Alien. There's a lot of talk in Alien about the ship and about all that stuff and on the yonic imagery of that and passing through that and becoming, you know, losing your innocence. I think the whole losing your innocence thing is complicated with a character who from the very beginning is okay with murder, but like, it doesn't really make quite as much sense in this film. But
I think that there were a number of things sort of with that character.
Character being Taylor?
No, I mean...
With Leslie?
Vibe.
Like, yeah, yeah.
It felt like there were a number of comments made by the movie, either in the form of jokes or more serious commentary or something, usually jokes, where it was about that scholarly thing, like that academic thing, or a trope. But, so, for example, the phallus thing. It's like, oh, she's gonna... I like the idea that she's gonna empower herself. Yeah. She's gonna save herself with this phallic object.
Yeah.
But I am going to sabotage all the phallic objects so that she can't actually save herself with them. So what's that? Like, they didn't go all the way with the joke. Like, the joke happened, but it didn't have any implications in the story.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Right. Well, she definitely ends up killing him in one of the more yonic ways that you could.
Yeah, or
killing him.
Yeah. Oh, the vice grip, you mean.
Yeah.
Because she inserts him into it.
I mean, I personally love that stuff because that is so... all those lines they're having there that are so academic... I really enjoyed, especially at the time when I first watched this movie, was in a class where we were specifically reading articles like this. And so it really played well for me and is just so inside and so, like, esoteric that, you know, you don't usually see a joke like that. And so I really appreciated that, especially the joke about so you're pro-life.
Right.
And just, like, the fact that, like, a lot of these movies were made in such a way for conservative values or whatever, where... maybe even the people making them weren't really thinking through the message they were saying, because some of the messages might have been conflicted with what they were aiming for.
And they were made commercially.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, like, funny about which things sort of come up, which I don't even necessarily think people were thinking about, but it happened so often that it clearly, something was going on there.
Yeah, it's a social or cultural.
So I definitely like the pro-life thing, I definitely like the chauvinist thing.
I don't think that Leslie says anything... like, any words between when he says goodbye and, like, his last words.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wish that there had been, like, some... like, for example, if Taylor knows that he won't attack someone when they're in the closet...
yeah.
They could go wait in the closet an unreasonably long time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's sort of similar to what I'm talking about.
And then he'd be like... you're really gonna make me do this? Because I will come in there and murder you. I'm gonna walk out for 2 minutes and you have to leave.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And, like, totally. And I think they, and like, because he's so funny and like charismatic, and you know, and like in his mind also, they're all gonna die, except for maybe her.
Yeah.
So it's not like he has to worry about them like ruining his reputation.
Yeah, it almost. I mean, I don't want to quite attack this movie, but it almost feels like they were more inclined to just make jokes about the things that have been noticed than actually say anything. As far as, like, I think that they were playing with all those tropes and all the gender tropes or whatever, but I'm not sure that they actually cared about actually doing anything with them or changing them or going against them in any way as much as they just wanted to joke about them. I do think that's debatable. I think that there clearly are... so there's some commentary going on here, but it's just so much clouded in the comedy that it's hard to piece out what they were serious about.
Right. And the movie doesn't feel like it has any filler. It feels like they had a lot of stuff to do. So when they make mention of the penis thing and then they don't do anything with it, or when they make mention of the closet thing and they don't do anything with it, it's not like, well, you had all this opportunity to do so because you don't want to make that movie super long.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so. Wouldn't want the movie to be any longer, but I wouldn't cut it much if I were to cut it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those movies where there's definitely a lot to pick apart, but at the same time, it's just, like, I think it's an enjoyable movie, yeah. and it's an enjoyable movie to pick apart. Like, right. even though, like, I do think that there are things I don't agree with,
yeah.
obviously.
No, like, yeah, definitely want to, like, say, just because I feel like I've mostly been critical, you can be critical of a piece of art that you really like.
Yeah.
Like, just like you might, you know, really like a celebrity, but know that they have, like, said crappy things in the past, you can like them, but still acknowledge that they're saying things and, like, just not defend those things.
Yeah.
And say, yeah, that's an issue for sure, mm. and I'm willing to talk about it. Yeah. And still enjoy the movie aesthetically,
yeah.
or the person's work aesthetically.
Yeah. And something like the upskirt thing, I don't even know that I would necessarily be upset with them for as much as I just think that what they were trying for failed. Because I do think they were trying, potentially, for something positive there, as much as when you do it that many times, I feel like they thought they were doing something clever.
Yes.
But I just don't think it worked.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like, if it had been still in, like, the documentary, and, like, she could have said something like, get that camera out of there.
Yeah.
Then it would have definitely come across as a joke. As it is, it kind of just seems like three upskirt shots.
Yeah. Give me a f***ing blueprint of that barn, because what is the architecture?
Yeah, it's
that?
Very confusing. Very confusing, for sure. There was this one last thing I want to point out, which is just that one thing I really enjoy about this movie is that, especially after seeing Scream and after seeing something like Cabin in the Woods, and just that there are so many postmodern meta horror movies these days, that when something like this comes out and is still able to make it fresh and not just feel like a repeat of Scream,
yeah.
I really appreciate that. That it doesn't feel like a redo of Scream, even though it has so many of the similar elements. And so I think that that's a big part of why I really enjoy this movie, is that it takes something that's been done a lot and still manages to put a new twist on it.
Agreed. I thought that it brought something new to the table of meta-horror movies.
Yeah.
I also really enjoy the movie, for the record.
Okay. Do you? Is
yeah.
that for reals?
Yeah, I do like it.
Yeah. All right. Is anything else? Any last words?
Don't kill anybody.
Don't kill anybody. We do not condone it.
Can that just be your closing line on the podcast?
Don't kill anybody. All right. If you guys want to send us any feedback about this or about a future horror movie you want us to check out, you can do so at thescreamcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at ScreamPod at Twitter and send us a tweet there. Or you can go on our blog, thescreamcast.wordpress.com, and send us a comment over there. Thank you guys so much for listening. And as Jesse said, don't kill anybody.